Welcome to the Best Science Medicine Podcast, BS without the BS.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the 557th episode of the Best Science Medicine Podcast. My name is James McCormack, and I'm a professor with the Faculty of Pharmaceutical Sciences at the University of British Columbia.
I'm Mike Allen. I'm a family doctor and the director of practice support at the College of Family Physicians of Canada, and I'm also an adjunct professor at the University of Alberta. And joining us today from a little bit further away than Alberta is Emily from Ottawa, but originally from Quebec.
Emily. Oh, come on, Mike. Come on, you know better. I'm not from Quebec, but that's okay. I'm from France. You know that. Nick already went over that a while ago. Anyways, it doesn't really matter. So,
not Quebec City. You're from Quebec, the province.
No. I mean, I did do undergrad at McGill, but that's and residency for medical school. But I was born and raised in France. You know where the Olympics are going to be next year? Anyways. Well, that's okay. We'll pretend that you knew that.
Yeah. So all the way from France, as I well knew.
Perfect.
Yeah. So, Emily, why don't you just let everyone know who you really are?
Yes. So I am Emily Braschi. Last name is from Italy, not France. And I am a family doctor working in Ottawa and a physician advisor with the College of Family Physicians of Canada.
And we've had you on for, this is your second podcast, and what's the clinical question we're going to answer today?
Yeah, so the question was, what are the risks and benefits of the topical calcineurin inhibitors for atopic dermatitis? And by topical calcineurin inhibitors, we're talking about pimecrolimus, in particular 1%, and tacrolimus 0.1% and 0.03%. And then this question has kind of multiple sub-questions. So how do topical calcineurin inhibitors compare versus vehicle, which is the equivalent placebo for dermatological conditions, or corticosteroids, cream, which are very commonly used for atopic dermatitis also. I guess another question could have been versus ointments, but we didn't have much data for that, so we did not cover that.
Yeah. And now you did this with Samantha Moe. Where did you guys come up with the question? Or was it, I mean, it's an obvious thing. I mean, lots of people have atopic dermatitis and there's a number of different medications.
Yeah, to be honest, I didn't know much about the topic, mm-hmm. and I did a quick PubMed, and I thought it was going to be easy peasy, Mike and Sneezy, so I volunteered for it, and I was very wrong.
Yeah. Well, why don't you let people know, what evidence did you guys find? Because, like I said, I think pretty much everyone, I think you'd agree, Mike, everyone has said, I think this TFP will be easy.
Yeah. And that's the last words anyone says.
Yeah. And then, yeah. So why don't you let people know about the what evidence you guys found?
Yeah. So the first question is, how did it compare versus vehicle or low potency topical corticosteroids? And we chose to sort of clump those two together. Whether or not low potency topical corticosteroids, and here we're talking about hydrocortisone 1%, how does it compare to vehicle is a different question, but we don't have much evidence that it's a whole lot better. So for the purpose of today, they're clumped together. So for tacrolimus, 0.1%, and also so for the rest of the podcast, for the TFP, we focus on tacrolimus 0.1% because there's some evidence that is superior to tacrolimus 0.03% with similar side effects. So it made sense to focus on the 0.1% for that reason.
So Emily, why don't you go sort of through what evidence you guys found?
Yeah. So for the first question, which is how did it compare versus vehicle? Or low potency topical corticosteroids. So for the purpose of this TFP, we clumped the low potency corticosteroids with the vehicle. I mean, obviously that's a whole different question, whether or not they're exactly the same, but we don't have any great evidence that they're better. So for the purpose of today, we just clumped them together. For tacrolimus, 0.1%. And the reason why we're focusing on the 0.1% is because there is some evidence that is superior to tacrolimus 0.03% with similar side effects. So we used for this TFP tacrolimus 0.1%. We had two RCTs, 460 patients, and the improvement of atopic dermatitis was 48 to 67% with the tacrolimus versus 16 to 38% with the vehicle or hydrocortisone acetate 1%, which was the low potency corticosteroid. That gives us a number need to treat of 3 to 4 at 3 weeks. And we had another RCT, which did not have a responder analysis for different way of reporting results, which pretty much seemed the same thing, that tacrolimus was better than vehicle.
And so at a minimum, I guess tacrolimus, because some of it was compared to low potency topical corticosteroids, yeah, which would have some effect, I assume.
Well, you assume that's a
It,
a topic, you know, for a different TFP, James.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's,
which is forthcoming, James. Thank you for it's a segue to that TFP. Do you want to switch to that right now? No.
No. Yeah. So the only reason I'm saying that is that, you know, the estimate is, would be an underestimate relatively speaking, but we'll see what the other TFP says.
I mean, if you assume, I mean, just to have a little teaser, pretty much there are three trials, which is very few. One showed it was worse in vehicle, one showed it was the same, and one showed it was a little better.
Right.
So we don't really know whether it is better than vehicle, but it is a topic for a different day.
Yeah.
Emily, when you say we don't know, James and I know, but we just like to keep these things secret.
Yeah, we could write these TFPs just off the top of our heads. We know all the evidence.
Yeah. Closing your eyes.
But sure. So we're talking, at least with these agents, roughly speaking, you know, a benefit of sort of 20 to 25%, roughly speaking, over the...
For tacrolimus. Yeah, let's talk about pimecrolimus next.
Yeah.
Yeah, so pimecrolimus, there are actually a lot more RCTs than for tacrolimus for this particular question. So versus vehicle, we only have versus vehicle for pimecrolimus, nothing, no hydrocortisone. And we had two different types of trials, some that use pimecrolimus continuously, and usually it's a short outcome of 3 to 6 weeks, and some that use pimecrolimus at first sign of disease when to try to prevent the use of steroids, and those are longer trials, usually about 6 months. And we did have one meta-analysis of 8 RCTs, 2,298 patients, that showed that it was improved atopic dermatitis for 44% of patients on the pimecrolimus versus 22% of the vehicle. And that gives us a number need to treat of 5 at 6 weeks. And
now,
whether...
James,
yeah,
sorry. Oh, sorry, Emily. Go ahead.
I was just going to say whether pimecrolimus is used continuously or at first sign of disease gives sort of similar absolute benefits.
So, James, you were saying that tacrolimus works somewhere between 20 to 25%.
Yeah, yeah.
And I wanted to draw a distinction with pimecrolimus, which worked at 22%.
Oh, that's very clear then. Thank you. You know, it's so different. As we've always said with these podcasts, the devil is in the details.
Yeah, because it's exactly the same.
Yeah. So nothing really magical. And you may have heard it here. First, this may be the first time you're hearing it. Just because it's maybe a newer one doesn't make it better. But
maybe,
yeah.
But we're going to get into that because that's part two, I think, Emily, right?
It is part two. So just to recap briefly, part one, so versus vehicle or low potency steroids, we have similar effects of tacrolimus 0.1% and pimecrolimus 1% for the improvement of atopic dermatitis. So the second question, which was the one that ended up being very tough, was how did it compare versus topical corticosteroids? And here we're talking mostly about moderate or high potency topical corticosteroids. So we ended up having three systematic reviews. One that bunched everything together. So they put all of the calcineurin inhibitors, all of the corticosteroids together. And when they bunched everything together, pretty much they were very similar. The issue is you're comparing apples to, I don't know.
Different types of apples.
Different types of apples. You're comparing totally different types of things. So you don't know what to make of it. Huge heterogeneity. Then we had another RCT, a Cochrane review, which was great, but then they only compared apples to exactly the same color apples. So it had to be exactly the same calcineurin inhibitors with exactly the same corticosteroids. So in the end, you don't really have any generalization. You just have a list of RCTs. And then we had a third systematic review that was missing half of the metagraph. So I don't know what happened. A ghost came and just sucked it all up. So it was not usable. I did my due diligence. I did email the journal, but I didn't hear back. I didn't know that it was not usable.
So
we were Yeah.
Go ahead. Just say, so what was the, when you guys sort of, and this is just a great example, Mike, as you know, of it's never, even if you have all the studies, there's so many other things that can pop up that it gets confusing.
Oh, God.
And so you have to sort of weave your way through the muck. And so when you guys did that, what did you find for the evidence of these agents versus the sort of the high potency topic corticosteroids?
Yeah, so we were stuck with a number of RCTs, and the way we did it was just reported which ones were showed superiority or inferiority and which ones showed no difference. Mm-hmm. So for ticagrelor 0.1%, we had two RCTs, so 1,540 patients that showed it was superior to the moderate or high potency corticosteroids. We have improvement of dermatitis of 73 to 93% with the tacrolimus versus 52 to 88% for the corticosteroids. And that was at 3 to 12 weeks. We had another RCT that reported slightly different outcomes, but that showed similar results. And then the corticosteroids used were hydrocortisone butyrate 0.1% and fluticasone 0.005%. We also had four RCTs, less patients. So originally the two first RCTs, that was 1,540. The four RCTs are 513 patients, so less patients. But it found no difference at 2 weeks to 11 months between tacrolimus 0.1% and moderate to high potency corticosteroids.
So I can bet which ones the drug companies would present.
Yes.
Yes. You know, and it's tricky what to do with, you know, when you have sort of, because the question is one better than the other? And, you know, with one you have, what is that, roughly 10 to 20%, I guess, better than high-potency topical corticosteroids, and the other one showing no difference. So we'll get into the context of that, but it's just an interesting finding. And the evidence is never black and white.
No.
Yeah. But overall, for tacrolimus, you could argue that there's more patients that were randomized that end up being improved with tacrolimus versus the corticosteroids.
Right, yeah.
But you're right, there is some inconsistencies.
Right.
For pimecrolimus 1%, so we had one large trial, 2,418 patients. It was an open label trial, meaning that, yes, patients were randomized, but they knew what they were assigned to. It was infants 6 to 12 months with mild to moderate disease, and they used hydrocortisone butyrate 0.1%. And at 3 weeks, they showed that it was no difference between the pimecrolimus 1% and the corticosteroids. So very similar treatment success. Then we had two other RCTs, 745 patients, and those were mostly adults with more severe disease than the ones enrolled in the infant studies. And in that case, the improved atopic dermatitis was 37 to 53% with the pimecrolimus versus 68 to 88% with the corticosteroids at 3 weeks. So the corticosteroids were superior to the pimecrolimus with a number needed to treat of 3 to 4.
So sort of in contrast to the tacrolimus, we've got that the steroids are likely better than the pimecrolimus. And so the only possible way for us to understand what's going on is to have a comparison. And fortunately, there are some comparisons between those two agents.
Yeah, there is. So the question, the burning question is tacrolimus 0.1% versus pimecrolimus 1%. So we did have one meta-analysis of three RCTs, not a whole lot of patients, 543. And just as an aside, two of those trials were published by the tacrolimus study group. And for good response of treatment, it was 35% for tacrolimus versus 19% for the pimecrolimus at 2 to 6 weeks. So that's a number needed to treat of 7, favoring tacrolimus over pimecrolimus. We also had a network meta-analysis with an indirect comparison that showed no difference. But the meta-analysis with direct comparison with three RCTs is probably more reliable than a network with indirect conversion. So overall, it seems that the tacrolimus 0.1 is superior to pimecrolimus 1%.
Yeah, and when we're saying that, we're saying it looks like about roughly 15% better.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is, and it's great that there are head-to-head trials, because that's really what you need to answer the question if especially within classes of medications, whether one is better than the other. Now, they stuck to single doses. So there's it's hard to know whether these are equivalent doses and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, that's all we're going to have when it comes to these agents. But one of the main reasons we're looking into this though is because people have issues potentially with taking topical corticosteroids for a long period of time. So what were the adverse effects of these guys found?
Yeah, that's one thing that's really hard to. So the effect of long-term corticosteroids is something that I think we all know is happens, but it's very difficult to quantify in RCTs, and even just cohort data is not that great. But the systematic reviews that we had, the main side effect of topical calcineurin inhibitors are skin burning. So we're talking 30% versus 9%. That's a number to harm of 4. But these don't seem to improve with time. So if we're looking at skin burning pruritus, the example of one RCT that used tacrolimus 0.1%, they reported 51% at week 1, which is really not insignificant. But that went down to 17% at week 2 and then 7% at month 6. So if you use it fairly regularly, it seems like the skin burning and the pruritus improves, although it still remains much more common than with topical corticosteroids. The main one that people worry about with the corticosteroids is skin atrophy. In the RCTs that we have, it was 0.8% of patients versus 0% compared to the calcineurin inhibitors. But most of those trials were short-term. We don't have good trial data of people using, you know, moderate to high dose for a long time in terms of skin atrophy. So it's kind of a side effect that's well-reported, that people think is true, but that we're having a hard time quantifying in a reliable way.
Yeah, which is always tricky. I mean, adverse effects are always much more difficult to sort of get out of these clinical trials. And in fact, you know, especially if you've got, you know, 51% burning it the first week, that might affect blinding of these studies a little bit. I don't know if that, you know, changes the actual findings of that, Mike, Mike or Emily. But I think, Mike, I don't, you know, you've had experience with using topical corticosteroids and all that sort of stuff. What's your take on the issue with skin atrophy?
Yeah, so I'll say a couple of things. First, when you mentioned about the dosing of tacrolimus and pimcrolimus, the one thing to remember is you're right that we haven't tested if they're equivalent doses, but these are the highest marketed doses of those two products. So they're kind of, that's what people have to go by. So I think it's a reasonable comparison.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
As far as adverse events go, it's a fascinating thing about topical corticosteroids. Here's something that we use every day in our practices. Yeah. They're so commonly prescribed for all sorts of conditions.
And so effective.
Yeah, and in atopic dermatitis in particular, a lot of concern in kids, and it's very interesting because I've heard pediatric dermatologists really be quite reassuring. I won't say completely dismissive of adverse events, but very reassuring that the adverse events are, when used kind of as directed intermittently at higher potencies and more regularly at low potencies, that they're really not that, they don't cause a lot of harm. But we know they can cause atrophy, but quantifying that atrophy is super difficult. And then on top of it, eczema skin is often quite thickened anyway. Let the cat out of the bag too much, but Emily will tell us in an upcoming podcast about corticosteroids and skin thinning. And the best research on that is actually on normal skin, which is, of course, and it's biopsy related results rather than anything else. So it's, you know, that's what we have. That's our best available evidence. So it's quite unfortunate that something used so exceptionally commonly and talked about so much, we don't have a lot of great evidence in quantifying it in eczema skin.
Yeah.
It's shocking, actually.
Yeah, yeah. No,
you think about all the money spent on research, and we've talked about women's health, how grossly under-researched it is. This is another example of an area. It's like the bias with women's health may well be gender-related, but there's actually a whole bunch of things in medicine where conditions are common and completely neglected.
Yeah, yeah. No, no, for sure.
And this being for them.
Yeah. And it's interesting because, as you know, one of the selling of newer agents is that they are better tolerated. And if you don't,
that's always the way.
Yeah, and if you don't know And that may be rightly or wrongly that they're better tolerated. Often it's they're better tolerated until we really started using it.
Yeah, yeah. And they're also better tolerated in the condition that that is. So we'll say they're better tolerated for blank, but yeah. Then they've got a host of other adverse events that compensate for that. You know, yeah. Like it's usually the marketing is very structured to target a concern that, you know, so if I was giving corticosteroids, inhaled corticosteroids for kids, I would target the risk of growth reduction.
Yes. Yeah.
And how it, we know that it's tiny. If it exists, there's some compiled RCT evidence of kind of a, a centimeter or whatever, but that is what I would target because it would worry patients and parents. Even though I might have a whole host of other adverse events, I would target the thing that would make people worried.
Yeah, no, for sure. And as soon as you use the word steroids, people get nervous.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. So it's interesting. So that's all of the evidence. Why don't you just give us a little bit of the context then, Emily?
Yeah, I mean, just one last thing to add. Interesting. For the biggest adult RCT for pimecrolimus. So those are patients that were told to sort of use DMARD, the high potency corticosteroids, only when they had at the first signs of a flare, and once it was controlled to stop it. There are patients enrolled in trials, so probably more health literate than some of our patients. And despite that, about more than half of the patients used the topical corticosteroids more or less continuously for a whole year.
Yeah.
So just, you know, once again, going to the harms, there is, you know, how we're prescribing it, what we tell patients, and how they're used, you know, in real life. And there is definitely some evidence from trials that patients are using corticosteroids more than they were intended for.
Well, because they're probably having the effect that they want to see.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, but, for sure.
Yeah. So in terms of so just to summarize, so tacrolimus and pimecrolimus seem to be both effective against vehicle low potency corticosteroids versus medium or high potency. So they're both effective against vehicle or low potency corticosteroids. When we look at medium or high potency topical corticosteroids, there is more heterogeneity, so some inconsistencies among trial results. But overall, we could say that tacrolimus is probably similar or better than corticosteroids, whereas pimecrolimus is probably similar or a little worse than topical corticosteroids. The pimecrolimus, because it is the only one of the two agents that has one large RCT that's infants, is marketed, approved for patients over 3 months old, whereas tacrolimus is only approved for patients more than 15 years old. So I guess the marketing for pimecrolimus is in the younger crowd and tacrolimus for the older ones, knowing that tacrolimus probably works a little better than pimecrolimus.
Yeah, and
tacrolimus, tacrolimus is kind of at mid-teenage years, kind of 15 on up, where the other one can be used in kids, which is interesting. The more effective one doesn't have an indication in children, which is where a lot of people are trying to avoid corticosteroids.
Yeah, and you guys know as well as I do that just because it's approved doesn't mean the other one, you know, one is better than the other or anything like that. It's just that they've gone through the process of getting it approved for a particular age group, which is, I applaud the companies for doing it, but it allows them to market it differently.
Yeah, yeah. You're right, James. If we only use drugs that were approved for certain indications, we'd have almost nothing for chronic pain. And amitriptyline.
I guess the only caveat is because we're talking about 3-month-old infants, right? So I think people tiptoe around that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think if I was choosing, I would choose pimecrolimus first for young kids for sure.
Yeah, yeah. And then we've already talked about it, but the nice thing about the application site reactions are, even though they're quite common early on, you do build up a tolerance to them.
Yeah. And then it was also, I mean, I think it's still relevant to mention because it's not that far away that there was an FDA black box and a health kind of warning for the topical cortical calcineurin inhibitor, that they may increase their risk of lymphoma and skin cancers. So in the last 5 years, we do have 3 meta-analyses of observational studies that 2 out of 3 suggest that there may be some sort of correlation, and we're talking at 0.08% with tacrolimus virus versus 0.05% versus control, so very, very tiny. The issue is that severe atopic dermatitis is a risk factor for lymphoma, and that cutaneous T-cell lymphoma can actually be misdiagnosed as atopic dermatitis. So for those reasons, international dermatologic associations do not think that there is any causation between those agents and skin cancers. And then the Health Canada warning was actually removed in 2021. So I think that's not something that patients need to be canceled about anymore. There is no thought that it would increase skin cancer.
Which is good. And those Health Canada warnings, they are sort of the bane of the existence of healthcare providers, of what to do with them. Because,
this was a huge issue early on. Came out, there was a lot of talk about this. And so, I certainly was avoiding prescribing them.
Yeah.
And what Emily's gone through already, I was quite surprised to learn that tacrolimus was equivalent or maybe even better than moderate potency corticosteroids. Like mm-hmm. that was a big surprise to me.
Yeah.
So because having seen clinical trials of pimecrolimus not do as well, I was really surprised about the tacrolimus.
Right,
so yeah. I think it's unfortunate that there was this association with them early on, because we really, many of us
avoided them. And then it's interesting, those Health Canada warnings, they're so often are coming from either case reports or just really sketchy observational studies, and cause and effect for these things is so tricky.
Oh, yeah, and supposition about the mechanism of action and what they're related to, or what might have been found if they were used orally or whatever.
Yeah,
there's a whole bunch of reasons that that these warning labels get applied, and then they, we in practice don't know the background of that.
Exactly.
We don't. So, and even if we did, it would still be somewhat dangerous to prescribe, because if you ignored the warning because you knew the background and the evidence was sketchy, and then the patient went on by chance to get that adverse effect, you wouldn't matter how carefully you reviewed the evidence.
What matters
is what your colleagues are doing.
Yeah, no, exactly. And then the only other thing to talk about is the cost with the tacrolimus at 30 grams is about $103 versus betamethasone valerate, which is about $13. So you're looking at about almost a tenfold difference in price. So does that affect what you guys do? Certainly if I looked at that, given what we have, what the evidence is here, I would still start with steroids if it was me, but that's, I don't know what you guys would do.
I think that's what most people say, is you start with corticosteroids, and if they're going to need them long-term, you consider the calcineurin inhibitors. Yeah. But in as you say, James, if 30 grams is not a lot for someone with a bad case of eczema.
No, it's going to get very pricey very quickly.
Yeah. And so a lot of it is just, it's out of, you can imagine if you needed, five tubes per month, you would never be able to, most people could never.
Well, you could, Mike.
Yeah, for sure. That'd be no trouble because of all the money we make on the podcast.
Exactly. Yeah. But yeah. So yeah, no, this is great. So why don't you just quickly run through the bottom line, Emily, and then we'll get going.
Yeah. So our bottom line was that for the improvement of atopic dermatitis, tacrolimus 0.1% is at least equivalent to moderate potency topical corticosteroids. Pimecrolimus 1% is better than placebo, so vehicle, but likely inferior to tacrolimus 0.1% and to moderate potency corticosteroids. Burning skin sensation is common early with tacrolimus or pimecrolimus, and we're talking 30 to 50% of users, but tapers for most patients down to about 10% or less than 10% at 6 months.
Perfect. And I think it's really important that, as we've said for 557 podcasts, it's nice to know ballpark numbers. And that's what's, I think, so great about our TFPs and the people who write them. I write a few, but not many. But the people who write them, is we get some of the numbers to help the context of how you can have conversations with people about it, rather than saying it's better or not better or worse, or it causes skin issues and so on. So it's really great to do that. Anything else you want to add, Mike?
Nope, that's all good, James.
Yeah. So I think we'll just leave it at that. So thanks as always for listening.
Talk to you later.
Thank you.